who's my father is supporting, so I go and I open up the door, and there's a paramilitary group, and my father is taken. He's disappeared for 9 days. Later on, uncovered by my family members in the prison, and had been tortured by the paramilitary group that has been sort of supporting initiation of a new regime in place of the old regime. So I'm used to the idea, since then, as hearing the stories, I'm used to this idea that I'm coming from the side of the repressed side, from the side of the victim. But so this would be something that I would like to address. But if you look across the spectrum, and if you find any other Georgian, that would be the only story that you would hear. That would not be a story of the perpetrators. You would only hear the story of victimization, that we Georgians, we have been victims. One time it's Russians, then it's Soviets, then it's this government, then it's next government. There is no story of the perpetrators that are among us, right? Because if you have victims, you have to have perpetrators. And if you look at history, there are, factually, even among Soviets, even among communists, and among them, specifically the Georgians that have taken up the leadership positions, like Stalin. However, even in such cases, Georgian society has difficulty facing that story of perpetrators among us. So this is how I'm taking up this model, whether you call it the South African TLC or Peruvian or any other model of uncovering truth, to change the victimization narrative, which is so pertinent in Georgia. Second part of the same story of my family continues as follows, is that, and I'm just saying bring this because I know it the best, and it exemplifies that so many things that has been happening across the country, so it's not an isolated example. So what happened is that after the struggle from the paramilitaries, the new government tried to increase stabilization in the country and arrest former criminals, thugs, and members of the paramilitaries. And there is an infighting among paramilitaries themselves, and this is, we're talking about 1999, 1992, 1983 period. So what happens is that the guy that abducted my father ended up being killed. And in the infighting, and the guy that was in charge of the whole operation, the general, was later on in 2005 arrested for embezzlement in a really murky situation, trial, being not sure whether he returned the money, he didn't return the money, or what happened to him. This what I would call is God's justice. So you see, they did something bad to your father, so they got their revenge, they got their return, they were punished for this. What I would like to see in terms of purposes of the process that should be in place in Georgia is not God's justice, which we don't know what it is, we don't know when it's going to take place, we don't know how retributive it is and things, but people's justice. People taking up responsibility, Georgians or Georgian citizens taking up responsibility for all these processes and bringing in institutions that would not depend on those amorphous concepts, but would depend on predictable concepts of justice based on the rule of law. And where does the rule of law come from? It comes from another friend, which is a Greek author of Greek tragedies, Aeschylus, who has a wonderful tragedy. I'm not into Greek tragedies in general, but this one I like particularly because it relates to law, and it narrates first of the first instance of establishing regular trials in Greece. By Aeschylus, a trial by Athena, as opposed to the system of avenging. So what happens in this trial is that the main actor Agamemnon in the tragedy Orestia, Agamemnon goes, fights Trojan War, and because he's fighting a Trojan War, he needs and he's sort of direct leading a sheep. He needs winds, the god of winds, to help him, and then he sacrifices his daughter to the god of wind. But then he has to come back home having won the Trojan War, and his wife is of course really angry with the fact that he's killed his daughter, their daughter, and she has a lover, that's an important factor. So his wife conspires, and then as he comes back, basically murders him. And that's Clytemnestra. But what happens, but after that of course there are people and the chorus and the leader in the chorus that are sort of angry with the fact that she avenged their daughter by killing her husband who won the war, so he's a hero, he should not be killed. And the squirrels is sort of confronting this lover by saying, you know, we'll haunt you for this murder. This should not have happened. And what Clytemnestra comes back, stops them in the middle of when they're going to start fighting the chorus, the people's justice, and then Aegisthus, the lover, and says, no more, my dearest, no more grief. We have too much to reap. Right here, our mighty harvest of despair. Our lives are based on pain. No bloodshed now. Fathers of Argos, turn for home before you act and suffer for it. What we did was destiny, and we could end the suffering. Now we would rejoice. So, and this is considered in the literature a transformative moment when from revenge and avenging, culture of revenge, which was really, really, really traditional in ancient Greece, they are going to go for a new culture. And at the end of the tragedy, we find out that it's a culture of justice. So that there's a trial by Athena. But this is not Clytemnestra's position. What she says and how that part of the play ends, Agamemnon, is she turns to her lover, who tries to react the people and basically shut them up, and tells him, let them howl, they are impotent. You and I have the power now. We will set the house order once for all. So she does not want that kind of justice which will be executed by third parties. What she says is that we have the power now, we have done what we wanted, and as long as we are in power, we are fine. This has been the dominant narrative of the powers in Georgia. Because we cannot say that there were no processes of justice or of prosecution of former perpetrators. There were such examples, and if I have time, we will go into discussion of this. But the problem with such processes was that they were not restricted and based on rule of law. That would be ruled by a third objective party, by law in that case, and based on the principles of rule of law, which would be predictability, proportionality of punishment, and things like that, right? No, it was selective justice executed in the view of the people and from the perspective of the people that just earned the power. And so, paraphrasing Clytemnestra, and would serve the purposes of remaining in power as long as they were in power. So this is something, would be the third part, getting rid of this would be the third purpose of bringing this new process in Georgia, that would be bringing people's justice based on the rule of law and not selective justice. And third, and may, I guess the fourth, something that I already mentioned in the beginning, is that it would be justice that would end the transition. So we're talking about transitional justice here, but Georgians, and I myself, having been raised in this narrative for the last 20 years, that we are in transition, I'm tired. I'm part of the generation of tired being in transition. And I think having a new process based on justice, based on rule of law, is something that will ultimately end the transition. Because it will do a few things that I will discuss later. So this is the switch of the that this is the fourth purpose that I think the whole process will serve. Now to go to the question as to where we have been and what has been done and what are we looking at. So we have been Georgia is a 5 million country. It's a 5 million people populated country of 5 million. So it's very, very small compared to all the landscapes that we discussed this morning. It's smaller than Argentina, it's smaller than much smaller than South Africa. So, and therefore its culture is very different. And that culture is more based on family, and it's based on familiarity. The fact that any next Georgian that you will ever meet probably knows me and I know her or him. The fact that and that's why as the Transitional Justice, Center for International Transitional Justice, the organization that works on transitional justice, just published a report on transitional justice in Georgia, saying it's called Breaking the Silence. It is skeptical about going into prosecutions in Georgia, and I completely concur with this, because once you start prosecution in Georgia, you will basically... you might end up prosecuting your parents, your uncles, your neighbors, because it's a very tight culture where everything everything is intertwined. And whether we have examples that where this has worked in other countries in similar situations, we can discuss this. So what has been done? So Georgia, the Soviet Union breaks up. So we have one problem, one aspect out of three that has to be addressed. That is communist past that has not been addressed, as opposed to the Eastern European countries, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and other, which have in some form addressed the problem of communist past in a form of lustration or vetting. Georgia has not gone through this. My position is that we have to go through this. I was part of the group of authors together with an opposition party in 2005 that wrote a draft law on lustration. It failed in the parliament. My position is it failed because half of the parliament is composed of former KGB people, and they, of course, they would not meet this. Paraphrasing the speaker before, turkeys do not vote for Thanksgiving, right? So the frustration law failed. This is the segment of the population and a problem which has to be addressed. Communist past, KGB agents, crimes committed by KGB agents. Most of those people are really old now. They might not take part in governance, which was the fear of the Eastern Europe and Central European countries. But the fact itself that we have never discussed this, we have never faced this, to me, is alarming and contributes to the fact that we are still stuck in transition. The second segment of the population is Georgians versus Georgians, political crimes. So the first government of Georgia is ousted through a military junta, coup. The president is killed or has killed himself. We still don't know. And there are a series of repressions by the new regime, which comes into power in 1993, is officially elected in 1995, and that's the Shevardnadze era, which ends also by a revolution, so not by an electoral process in 2003. So the new government comes in, which also selectively prosecutes some people, takes money from others, from the older government, and is itself committing certain crimes. For the moment, political crime. So this is Georgians versus Georgians, succinctly calling them. So what do we do with this? What kind of process do we install to address this situation? And is that process part of one bigger truth inquiry or a separate one? And the third and the most complicating factor is ethnic conflicts. That's why I think Georgia's example is difficult, because we don't only have either or, but we have all three components. And the ethnic conflict is we have two autonomous republics that have the ambition to secede. As of August of 2008, they have been officially recognized by Russia. And there have been wars and conflicts between Georgians and Abkhazians, Georgians and South Ossetians in 1993, 1994. And the latest one being between Georgia and Russia over South Ossetia in August of 2008, and this one you remember. So what do we do with them? There, one factor that we have is sort of an initiative for reparations, which also has failed, because the government tried to use that offer of reparation, and that's my personal point, as a conflict resolution tool, not just as a unilateral measure to restore them in their rights, people that have been deprived of their property or deprived of their rights, but as a tool for negotiating peace between these parties. And it has failed because we have never sort of progressed on this agenda for peace. So that draft law is also lying there somewhere. So where do we go from these three conflicting situations, and do we come up with something at all, or do we take the Georgian position that why do we open up a debate about things that happened 20 years ago? But we have seen from the literature, and we have seen from even these panels, that countries have gone back to the situations which took place 40 or 50 years ago, so many years later. And my personal position is that this is what we have to do, and with the main characteristic to be of all three processes, either if it's one big process with different components or three different processes and institutions, is that the truth process to be part for all of them. Because what it's going to do is, first of all, it's going to change the dominant narrative of victimization. It will lead us, Georgians, citizens of Georgia, to understanding our own culpability in everything that has happened, and our therefore our own accountability in all that happened, and it will therefore lead us to the to our own responsibility in building the country for today, and all of that would also, of course, will counter the problems that are entrenched in this Georgian society. However, I would like to say, and that's my last statement. I'm done with my time. When I gave a presentation of this idea among Georgians, someone told me, "You know how you look?" I said, "How?" "Like people look at vegans nowadays. People that are crazy, marginalized, have no idea what they're talking, and are absolutely unrealistic." And I agree with that. But I also think that abolitionists and feminists at the time of women's emancipation, they looked like that also, because they went against the meta-narrative present in the society. So I think my time and the time for these ideas is to come. It might not be today, but it is to come, definitely.
So thank you very much. Thank you.